Hi there, Dr. B here with your Module 6 clarifying lecture. Wanted to start talking about your peer reviews, final papers, talk about your inner teaching. I have one or two things to say about the discussion board, and then a few of you had some questions, so I'll answer those as well. Okay, so for your peer reviews and final papers, I would suggest that you check for in-text citations. Also, you want to run your paper through a plagiarism checker. I think Grammarly has one because we will be checking for plagiarism. Okay, so remember that copying in any form without giving credit is plagiarism. So copying from another person in class, that counts. Recycling an old paper, that counts as plagiarism. Taking something, a sentence directly from a paper without giving credit, those are all plagiarism. And if it sounds like I'm being a little heavy-handed, I'm kind of doing that on purpose because I, you know, want to talk about that before it happens. So also make sure that you're checking your APA style. I was looking at a lot of papers, and a lot of papers do not have in-text citations. If you are using information from somewhere else, whether you paraphrase it or if you're quoting it, you still have to cite it. So make sure that you have those in there. This semester, I'm finding more and more people are having some trouble with the directions. Make sure that you're posting links to Blackboard. So that we can grade stuff. If you just make it available to us, we won't be able to grade it. So make sure that you're making links available to us. The final paper will be presented in Word. And make sure that a voiceover PowerPoint does not count as a video. So make sure that you have something on YouTube or Kaltura rather than a voiced over PowerPoint. So those are kind of the fair warning things. And let's talk a little bit about your inner teaching. Michelle sent along a couple of things here. One of the things is we do not give antecedents. Antecedents are stimuli that happen in the environment. Remember that we don't control behavior. We don't give reinforcers. We don't give SDs. We can give commands, but that doesn't mean that somebody's going to follow them. These are things in the environment, okay? Just make sure that you're not talking about that or talking about introducing different antecedents. That's not how this works. Remember that generalization is a very specific process in which antecedents and reinforcers both play a huge role. So you want to make sure that you're thinking about these as processes, not as things. And that's why I kept going on and on about a reinforcement doesn't exist. It's a reinforcer, all those types of things, because it is very, very important. Because when you see it as a process, you're going to look at it very, very differently than if you are looking at a reinforcer as a thing. If you look at a reinforcer as a thing, or an antecedent as a thing, then it's like, well, why aren't they responding to it? If you're looking at antecedents and consequences and the relationship between them as processes, then you can start to troubleshoot a little bit more. Huh, that antecedent doesn't seem to have stimulus control over the behavior. Huh, that M&M I gave them doesn't seem to be a reinforcer because the behavior is not increasing. So that's why it's so important that you're looking at these things as a process. Also, I'm still seeing, and so is Michelle and Tina, lot of explanatory fictions. Things like feeling comfortable. You don't know how somebody else is feeling. Make sure that you're putting up against the Ms. Frizzle test. If you gotta take the magic school bus and drive into somebody's head to know for sure and to verify what's going on, it's an explanatory fiction, it's mentalism. So you need to say things a bit more behaviorally. you can say something like they will emit the response more reliably or something to that effect. But you can't say things like, oh, they're not doing something because they don't feel comfortable doing it. Be sure to discuss those technical terms. For the second one, we were talking about general case programming. So taking all the vacuum cleaners that that individual is probably going to use in their environment and making sure that we teach to all of those vacuum cleaners. Programming common stimuli was for number three. Real money is much better than trying to use Monopoly money. Why? Monopoly money has a weird color. It's not the same size. I have a good story about this. Told some of you about that. Many, many, many years ago, we put a student on a token system and he wouldn't cash in his tokens. They were just little tokens. And we would say, Jimmy, do you want to cash in your tokens? No, thank you. How about today? Do you want to cash in your tokens? No, thank you. And this went on for several days. So then we decided to ask him why he wasn't cashing in his tokens, to see maybe if we could change things around a little bit. And it turns out that he was going to save up all his tokens to buy a car. And when we told him that he couldn't buy a car with his tokens, that was not a good day. So that gives you an idea of why it's so important to program common stimuli. Obviously, we were not going to give him dollar bills to the point where he could buy a car. But it's important that he could discriminate between tokens that work in an economy within our school and money that works within the general economy in our area. So that's important. And then let's talk about multiple exemplar training. Some of you are still using the term examples for exemplar. I think that the Cooper book does that. I did my dissertation on multiple exemplar training, so I tend to be a little bit more strict with the terms. Multiple exemplars, why are they not examples? Because they are already members of the class. Okay, so these are members of the class that you're teaching. And if you teach enough members of the class, when you see other members of the class, the right response emerges without training. So for our third one about identifying animals, if you had to learn that each four-legged furry animal that you saw on a leash was a dog, and you hadn't been exposed to enough exemplars to be able to say, hey, that's a dog, that would be a real problem. So what we do is that if we want to teach the concept dog, we're going to expose the individual to a sufficient number of exemplars so that when they see another dog, they don't have to be trained that that's a dog. How many is enough exemplars? Well, there's not really a good number. You go until it generalizes. And then once it generalizes, you've got enough exemplars. So there really isn't like a magic number that you want to train up or anything like that. Some people learn, you know, a category or a class of stimuli with one exemplar. Some people need 300 to learn an exemplar, and it's going to change between exemplars and classes and all that kind of stuff. So there isn't one set of you do it this way. What's the difference between general case analysis and multiple exemplar training? General case analysis is where you train to all of the environments that the individual will be emitting the behavior. So with the vacuum thing, a multiple exemplar training doesn't make sense because there's two different vacuums. So train both vacuums. That's general case programming. If you're learning how to identify types of trees, then we want to use a multiple exemplar training because there's no way that you could teach all the trees that exist in the world. So that's the difference between multiple exemplar and general case programming. So it's really important to know all of those. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, you will need that in 623. For the discussion board and some of the Skinner discussions, I'm still seeing you guys kind of looking to Freud as an example, or as an exemplar, actually, of what Skinner's talking about. He's really using Freud as a contrast. So anytime Freud says that you have to do introspection to know, and that's how you have to change behavior, or you have to know a person in order to change them, Skinner's not saying that. From a behavioral perspective, we really can't ever truly, quote unquote, know another person. We can't reliably observe what's going inside their bodies. Now, can we do some scans and things like that? Can we look at the brain and see how it's firing? Yes, we can observe those things, but we can't necessarily know what that experience is like. We can observe their behavior. We can observe their descriptions of what's going on inside. But keep in mind that descriptions are one behavior, and experience of that actual response is another. So are they accurate? Are they not accurate? Who knows? They could be, they may not be. So there really is no way to know a person. But we can make some educated guesses based upon what we observe. All right, let's get to your questions. There's not too many this week. If we have a question about a comment a reviewer made, do we reply back to them in the Google Docs, send an email? As far as our interactions with our peer reviewers are concerned, are we done with them as of module 6? It's up to you. If you've done your peer review and your peers reviewed you, you've done your duty. If you want to ask a question of your peer reviewer, you can put it in an email to them. You can contact them in another way. You can respond to their comments in Google. There really is no set way to do it at all. So it really is up to you as to how you want to do this. And before I forget, in between Module 7 and Module 8, between now and Sunday at midnight is a big one, I will review drafts of your paper. So you send me a request via email, you send me a link, I will review drafts and give you feedback by request. I will not review any requests that are sent to me after midnight on Sunday, though. Okay, so if you want that review and you want some editorial comments from us, then please let me know. If you don't agree with a comment or a recommendation, what should you do? You can ignore. You don't have to accept all of the comments or the recommendations. I would take a good look. If somebody's saying, you know, your APA style should be this, you know, check it against Purdue OWL, or check it against the APA style manual before you go, no. So make sure that, you know, you're checking it and you're absolutely sure you want to reject that comment. If none of the group members fail to submit a draft for peer review by Monday, can I still comment on their draft if it is late? Yes, you may. Absolutely. In fact, you know, I encourage you, if you want to do additional peer reviews, if you want to look over people's papers multiple times, there's no extra credit in it, but you know, if you want to have a conversation with people, by all means, please do. Just remember plagiarism. So you know, you can't copy somebody's paper, but you can certainly work with each other to make your papers better. Please provide more practice activities. I wish I could. I have as many as I possibly can in here, and we've created some, but what I've got is definitely everything I could possibly find. So know that, if you go over that stuff, you're going to be okay. When we are talking about maintenance and generalization, what is the correct way to structure sentences? This is a great question. For example, we want the behavior to generalize, we want generalization, or we want to teach to generalization. Are there multiple correct ways or are all these wrong? They're not wrong, but I'm not sure about that want. I think it's probably better to say that we are teaching to generalization, or we plan to teach to generalization, or yeah, our objective is for the behavior to generalize. That would also be fine. We want generalization is probably a little bit too vague, but I think you can say teach to generalization. You can say the behavior generalized. Those are okay. But just be careful that we want. I don't see a discussion assignment posted for my group for this week. Please let me know if I should respond to a different group member instead. You can jump groups if necessary. Make sure that you have those two posts. So how can you do that? You can respond to two videos. You can respond to the same video and then somebody else in the group, but you gotta have two posts, even if there's only one video. Is there a spelling mistake anywhere in the peer review section? I'm not quite sure what you mean by this question, so if you can send me some clarification, that'd be great. All right, well, we kind of had a short one this week. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to talking to you soon.